This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Mr. and Mrs., Book 6 of the Mr. series, written by J.A. Huss, performed by Tad Branson, Joe Arden, Teddy Hamilton, Ryan West, Rob Shapiro, and Alexander Sendes.
Chapter 1. 5. My queen is scared as she looks out over our little lagoon in the Caribbean. I'm holding her hand, squeezing it tight, anticipating her emotions as they ebb and swell like the waves crashing on our private island beach. "It's gonna be fine," I whisper into her ear, trying to get my words past the wind. She nods, but her eyes never leave the horizon. Mr. Perfect is coming first, I know that much. And while we're both excited about that, he and Ellie aren't the Mr. and Mrs. we're anticipating the most. It's Cindy she wants to see, and Ariel, and Belle and Jasmine and Oliver, and her parents. But it's mostly Cindy and Oliver today. The rest of her family are coming tomorrow night to get ready for the weddings. We've seen her parents, and Belle, over the past 15 years. Quite often, actually. Several times a year, but it's never been enough. Jasmine, Ariel, Oliver, and Cindy, though. She hasn't seen them since she died. She hasn't talked to them. We have strict rules about her safety. I gave her a nap back when we cheated death, and I hid her away on this island. A nap her family could use to talk to her. It's called Dead Notes. A little pun on the Love Notes app I made for her when I was 15, and we were looking at our first real separation. Her family can call her phone number, hear her voicemail greeting, and then leave a message. If Rory were really dead, she'd never get those messages, but it would make the family left behind feel better. She's not dead. So she did get those messages, and so many of them were filled with tears and sadness, I wanted to take the app away. Of course I couldn't do that. It was her lifeline to her brother and sisters. But today all those messages from the family she's been missing will come in person, face to face. She's scared and I don't blame her. I'm scared too. I kept this secret from Oliver for 15 years. And yeah, back then he was just a kid, but he's not a kid now. I think he's gonna kick my ass. I think I deserve to get my ass kicked. I think I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be a relief to bring them all in on our secret. Then we hear it. The telltale sound of a helicopter's rotors echoing off the sky. We can't see it yet, but Rory leans forward just as Isabel and Anastasia, our 12-year-old twins, come up on either side of us. The younger girls, Matilda, who is 7, and Louise, who is 5, are both back at the house playing. They are still innocent and have no clue why we live on this island.
"Is that them, Daddy?"
Iza asks. "That's them," I say.
"McAllister and Ellie," Anna says. "He's a well-known philanthropist, and she's a writer. His net worth is..."
"Stop it, Anna," Iza says.
"No one cares what he's worth." "I just like to have my facts straight," Anna retorts defensively.
I look over at Rory and catch her smile. Our twins are so different. They aren't even identical. Iza has brown hair and brown eyes like me, while Anna has blue eyes and blonde hair like Rory. But Anna is my little analytical girl, while Iza is my little daddy's girl. Given the chance, Anna might take over the world one day. Iza will be content to mother everyone. If they ever get to leave this island, that is. They've been all over the world, but only on yachts and private planes, and everywhere we go, we have to skirt around customs. They've been smuggled in and out of more places than I can count. They have more fake birth certificates and passports than I can count, and they've never been to school. But they are worldly in every way that counts. They are educated, I've made sure of that. They are fluent in 3 languages, are well on their way to mastering calculus, and they know how to socialize, even if it's only with the well-hidden children of other outlaws. Our island is massive by island standards. 122 acres that holds a good proportion of jungle and cliffs to wander through and climb over, as well as 3 beaches. We have a stable of ponies, because no daughter of ours could possibly pass through childhood without a pony, and a garage filled with dirt bikes, because, according to their maternal grandfather, every girl needs to know how to ride a bike.
"Look,"
Izzy exclaims, pointing to the sky.
There it is!
The helicopter is still a ways off, but it's growing bigger as it approaches the island helipad. Rory squeezes my hand tighter, if that's possible.
Here we go, she sighs. Don't worry, Mommy,
Izzy says, ever looking for an opportunity to comfort someone. She's got Rory's other hand, while Anna stands by her side, shading her eyes from the sun.
Everyone will love us, and life will be normal again. You just watch.
We've told them everything, from the very beginning. When they were babies, we made it into a fairy tale. You are special princesses, hidden from the world to keep you safe. But a few years ago, we started adding to the story. People might want to hurt you, just because of who you are. You have to learn certain skills to keep yourselves safe. They studied jiu-jitsu relentlessly since they were old enough to follow instructions. We have a shooting range, and they are both well on the way to mastering that form of self-defense. They have learned to hack and code and survive on this island by fishing and lobstering and knowing their way around an edible plant. They can sail a boat, are learning to fly my new seaplane, and have taken lessons from their aunt Harper on how to command the crew of a yacht. I might be turning my little princesses into my older sister Sasha, but I don't care. I am their father, and I will keep them safe. Rory and I don't see eye to eye on that. She wants them in school. She wants them to be cheerleaders and go to prom and fill out college applications. I know the only reason she's gone along with my survival skill-based education is so that one day, probably in a few years, she can point to them and say, "See, they have learned to fly, now let's let them soar." But I will say no, every single time. The helicopter is close now, and a few seconds later it's hovering over the helipad, preparing for landing. It will drop off Mac and Ellie, then go back to wait for Nolan, Ivy, and baby Bronte. Everyone is coming separately today. West, Tori, and Ethan will come later on their boat, and I'll be leaving to pick up Pax, Cindy, Oliver, and Katya in a few hours. They're over on Pax's island, about 50 miles north of here. We've taken every precaution. Each of the misters is coming in stealth. Even though there's been no sign of Silver Society activity in almost a year, we're taking no chances. Tomorrow, our fathers are in charge of getting people here for the wedding. I smile. A real wedding, with all our families and lots of food. There's a tent set up, and we've flown in a famous band from Amsterdam for music. Ivy Delaney's father is even going to perform the service. Ivy and Nolan are already married, but they eloped the second he found out she was pregnant. This wedding is a promise he made to her father to make up for that faux pas. It makes me chuckle to think that Nolan and I actually have something in common aside from the Silver Society. Finally, our queens are getting the wedding they deserve. We've been waiting so long for this. We've dreamed about it, fantasized about it. Rory has told me every little detail about how she's always envisioned our wedding, and I'm going to make good on all of it, right down to our beautiful little princesses being part of it. We climb the sand dune that leads over to the helipad just in time to see the helicopter touch down. We're all barefoot, our normal footwear for so long we might have forgotten how to wear shoes, and the twins' long hair blows out behind them in the wind as we get closer. The copter door slides open and Mac jumps out first, ducking his head under the spinning rotors. He reaches inside and then Ellie emerges, taking his hand as he helps her down. I smile. Happy to see them again. Even though I don't know them all that well, we've been through some shit together. They feel like family. Having a group wedding with him, Cindy, Oliver, and the rest of the misters, well, I can't imagine anything more fitting. I'm walking towards Perfect, my hand outstretched, ready to shake his and pull him in for a man-to-man clap on the back, when someone else appears in the helicopter doorway. "Who's that?" I ask. More to myself than to Rory. But Rory answers anyway.
"That's Ming," she says over the roar of the helicopter. "Ellie's best friend. She's going to be her maid of honor."
"Oh," I say. I'm surprised. Not that Ellie would want her own maid of honor and not use one of Rory's sisters as a stand-in, but because no one mentioned her to me before this. I know Ivy's fine with Belle acting as her maid of honor. She's been close with all the Shrike sisters since she and Nolan moved away from the resort they run in California and out to Colorado to be close to all the other Misses. And I know Tori asked Ariel to be her maid of honor. They are thick as thieves and almost always up to no good together. Cindy wanted Jasmine, and Katja didn't want anyone. She has no family left, and she felt this was a way to honor the sisters she lost and who couldn't be here. But why didn't I know Ellie was bringing someone? In fact, how the fuck did I miss that there weren't enough Shrike sisters to go around for wedding party stand-ins? Did someone do a background check on her? I ask, irritated at this new development and at my lack of insight.
I did,
Rory says. But it's the way she says it that has me staring at her, waiting for the rest of the explanation.
She's very important to Ellie.
Rory stops for a moment, just as Mac approaches to take my still outstretched hand. Five, he bellows. Good to see you again. Yeah, I say, shaking his hand and doing the planned back clap, but I'm totally distracted now, Rory's words still echoing in my head. Ellie! Max shouts over the spinning rotors, just as she and Ming get far enough away from the helicopter so it can take off again. Have you ever seen such adorable little girls? He's beaming at my princesses, who are jumping up and down with excitement. We don't get a lot of visitors. I look at Ellie, sure there's more to this Ming thing, and find her frowning. But she notices me watching her, and the smile appears. She and Rory exchange looks, and I catch Rory shaking her head a little out of the corner of my eye. What the fuck is going on?
Oh, dear,
the Ming person exclaims.
They are perfection. Are you ready for the test, girls?
Test, I say, not understanding. What test? I look over at Rory, and she's wincing. What the hell is going on, Roar?
Oops, Ming says. You said you were going to tell him. I was just about to,
Rory says. Tell me what? I ask, getting frustrated. What are you talking about?
We're taking a test, Daddy. It was a surprise,
Izza says.
Yeah,
Anna says, beaming me a smile.
Surprise. We're going to school next year, so Ellie brought Ming to be our entrance exam test proctor. You know, so we can get into a good one.
You're not going to school, I say.
Yes,
Rory says, looking me straight in the eye.
They are. I've made up my mind, and they're taking the secondary school admission test. Ellie, Ming, and I have been planning this for months, and you will not interfere.
She locks arms with Ellie and Ming like they are a team, solid and unbreakable, and they march off over the dune towards the house, chatting about whatever. I look at Perfect, frowning. Sorry, he says with a shrug. I thought you knew.
Don't be mad, Daddy,
Anna says.
It's time to let us go.
And then she and Izza, the little traitors, take off after their mother, firmly on her side. Because my queen has spoken, and to them, her word is law.
Chapter 2. Mac. Ellie and Ming disappear with Rory. It's kind of hard to get used to that idea after hearing Cindy, Ariel, and Oliver talk about their dead sister when all that shit with the Silver Society went down last year. But I'm adjusting. This island is something else. I mean, I've seen Paxton's Islands, the little one and the big one, but this is something altogether different. It's not some blown-out bunker or another rich man's idea of getaway paradise. It's like a private resort, except only one family lives here. There's a series of bungalows lining the beach we're staying on, five in all, one for each of us, plus there's several more on the other beach down the coast where families will stay when they arrive tomorrow. Why? I ask Five, turning to look at him. He's staring at the disappearing figures of the women as they make their way towards the bungalow Ming will stay in. Why what? He asks absently. Why all this? I say, panning my hand to the elaborate setup. Five turns to me, reluctantly almost. and shrugs off whatever's bothering him. We were planning on opening a resort and all this shit blew over. I say. I see. Yeah, Five says, sighing. Things didn't exactly go the way we planned. Or quite blow over, either. But hey, I offer. Because the dude seems a little distracted by what just happened out by the helipad. I'm not sure what this test shit is all about. Ellie didn't include me in any of her plans. Things have blown over now, right? Have they? Five asks back. Rory wants to send our kids to school. Yeah, and? I'm not really getting it. They could be targets. Well, I laugh. Come on, man. We're all targets. We've been targets. And from what Cindy and Oliver have told the rest of us, you're the reason. But my kids, if I ever have any, will most definitely not be hidden away from the world like this. That's because you don't really know how deep this shit runs. I shrug. I have a good enough idea. But the way I see it, my kids are far better off in the public eye, far safer than if no one knew about them. Believe me, I've tried the hiding shit myself after all that college crap. And the only thing it taught me was that I was running. And you know what? I ask. What? Five says, finally looking me in the eye. I'd rather fucking fight than run. He sighs, shrugs, and then says, hey, if you need anything, just pick up that phone. It'll connect to the house and one of us will pick up. You got a staff here, Aston? A few, he admits. Trusted people. Cool, I say. But he knows where I'm going with that comment. The only safe secret is the one no one knows about. And if people know he's here, the secret was never safe. And we've run background checks on everyone, so we're good there. I'm not the one who's worried, I say. Five says nothing to that, just walks away, heading in the opposite direction from the one the girls went. Our bungalow isn't too far, and the journey to it goes by too fast. There's so much to see here. I've been on private islands before, but this feels like a private country. I wheel our luggage into the room and collapse into the chair, looking for the TV. No fucking TV, are you kidding me? These people are really cut off from the world. I get what he's saying, and I get why he's scared, but they won. They're still here. And the way I see it, if people really want to find you, they find you. There's no way to really hide in this world anymore. I mean, you can try to stay secluded out here in the middle of the ocean, but eventually a satellite passes over or a boat goes by. Someone gets curious. It's an exercise in futility. Ellie comes through the door with a sigh. She's sweating from the heat. Even though it's October, this is the Caribbean, after all, and pulls her wide-brimmed hat off her head, tossing it towards the coffee table. It floats past and lands on the floor, so I pick it up as she collapses next to me. What's wrong? I ask, because something is definitely wrong. She's been acting weird all week. Nothing, she says, kicking her feet up. I gently grab her legs and pull them into my lap, slipping her shoes off in the process. When my fingers begin their little dance across the high arch of her foot, she relaxes and shoots me a smile. That feels nice, she says. Everything we do this weekend will feel nice. Mrs. Perfect. She smiles at the name, even though it comes with all kinds of baggage. I'm excited about that part, she says. What part aren't you excited about, I ask. You're not worried about the Silver Society coming back, are you? No, she says, and I'm relieved, because if she was, I'd have to pay more attention to that kind of thing. But Ellie is an eternal optimist. She's always been upbeat and positive. Even when she left me to find her own way in the world, she did it with the attitude of a fighter. Someone who wants to play and win. Someone who sees everything as an opportunity. But she's worried about something, and I just can't figure it out. Then what, I say. Because this is your wedding, Eloise. The sound of her full name has her cracking another smile. It's going to be the best day of your life. With that declaration, she pouts. What? I ask. She looks at me, every semblance of a smile gone. It's not. Why? Because the best day of my life is yet to come, and sometimes, Mac, I think that day will never come. That it'll never happen. Oh, I say, finally getting it. I slide my hand up her leg and squeeze her knee. Babe, it's only been a few months. We'll get there. You don't know that. We should go see doctors. I shake my head at her. Why? She demands. Because it's premature, Ellie. We've only been trying for a baby since January. It's not fair. It's October, Mac, she says, her tone firm and stern. Right. Exactly my point. 10 months is not a problem. I think it is, she says, pursing her lips. I think there's something wrong with me. Babe, I say, pulling her into my lap. There's nothing wrong with you. We're just getting started, and you're probably just stressed about the wedding and stuff. I mean, it's not exactly the best time to get pregnant, right? What's that mean? Nothing. It's just stressful. And stress... I shrug. It does shit to people. Just wait until all this is over and we're back home, all settled in. It'll happen. But what if it doesn't, Mac? What if we never get pregnant? Stop, I say. We're not talking about it right now. This weekend is just about us. Pretty soon we're going to be parents, and then we'll have to wait 18 years to get this kind of peace again. She makes a face, intent on continuing the argument, but I beat her to it. You know what we're going to do? I say, moving her legs off me so I can stand. What? She asks, her head tilting up to watch me. God, she's so pretty. We're going to go swim. We're the first ones here, and Five told me last week they have a whole other island that we can visit if we want time alone. So that's what we're going to do. When Nolan and Ivy get here with Bronte... Shit. That just made her frown again. Note to self, don't talk about Nolan's new baby. Well, we won't have another moment to swim naked. Ellie laughs. We're not swimming naked. The fuck we're not, I say, grabbing her hand and pulling her to her feet. We're going to go find that beach, take all our clothes off, and then I'm going to fuck you senseless. I get a real smile at that comment, so I keep going. Mrs. Perfect, I say, pulling her close so I can press my lips up to her ear. I'm going to make you forget about everything but me this weekend. You watch. I don't think you can, Mac, but my hand is already slipping up her dress. This is how it's done, right? This is the whole point of sex. To put babies inside you. Stop it, she laughs. But I got a laugh and a smile. Some more dirty talk is coming. I'm going to rip your clothes off on that private beach this afternoon, Ellie. And I'm going to stare at your body. I'm hungry for it. I'm hungry for you in a way I've never felt before. I'm going to touch you everywhere, I say, my hand sliding between her legs, my fingers already stroking her softly, and make you forget about everything but us. I kiss her soft, pliant mouth. Her lips respond, then her hands. She wraps her fingers around my biceps and squeezes, like she never wants to let me go. Are you ready? I ask. Are you ready for the best day of your life on Sunday? The day I say you're mine and you say I'm yours? And we say it together in front of everyone who counts, and there's no taking it back, Mrs. Perfect. Because what we have is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, babe. And we know that. We appreciate that. And no matter what happens, babies are not, I say, pulling back from our kiss so I can tilt her chin up with my fingertips and make her, force her to, look me in the eyes for the next part. No matter what happens, we're going to be happy. Because we're going to be together. I know, she says, trying to drop her head and stop my intense stare, but I don't let her. I keep her right where I put her, in my sight, in my arms. There's no buts. Not anymore. We're together. And if there's no baby, then we'll go adopt every kid we can find and fill that house up with little people who need us just as much as we need them. She nods and pulls away. I let her because she's aiming her cheek for my chest. So I give her what she needs more than my hand stroking her pussy. I give her a hug. Tori and West adopted. Right? I say. And see how happy they are? They don't need a biological kid to feel complete, and neither do we. We'll do whatever it takes to grow our family, Ellie, but right now, let's just be happy together. She looks up at me, her eyes welling up with tears. Okay, she says, giving in. But in the meantime, let's keep trying. She laughs. Because I really am going to take you to that beach and fuck you senseless before Mr. Fucking Romantic gets here, bringing all his drama with him. I take her hand, lead her out of the bungalow, and we find our way into the jungle. We go forward on faith. Faith that everything is perfect. Everything will be fine. And all we need is each other.
Chapter 3. Nolan. Isn't this exciting, Bronte? Ivy is cuddling our baby close to her breast as we all look up at the helicopter approaching. Bronte looks scared, if you ask me. It's her first ride. And to be honest, I'm not sure I like the helicopter idea. Maybe we should just charter a boat, I say. Ivy shoots me a weird look. She doesn't even bother answering because I've offered up this alternative several times and she thinks I'm being ridiculous. Bronte's mouth opens wide as the helicopter touches down. Her wild blonde hair is flying in the wind because I was in charge of dressing her this morning and I don't know the first thing about taming baby hair for a helicopter ride. I'm just about to point to her and say, "See, she's afraid of it." But her delighted squeal has me shutting up. It figures. We had to buy special baby headphones for the ride because the noise level is too much for a 6-month-old. I got black ones with little skulls on them. And while I was at it, I bought her a little flight jacket to match. It has the most badass patches on it. Ivy looked at her this morning, looked at me, back at her, then said, "She looks like she's starring in the baby version of Top Gun, Nolan." "Yeah," I said, pretty fucking pleased with myself. "So fucking cool, right?" Then I got another one of those looks for swearing. Girls. I don't shake my head as the helicopter door slides open and we walk forward, but I want to. It's not that I wanted a boy. It just never occurred to me that we'd have a girl. And I do realize, after the fact, that it wasn't rational. In fact, it was kind of stupid. It's just, I don't really know what to do with a little girl. It seems everything in that department belongs to Ivy. She does her hair, she paints her toenails with special baby polish, she buys her dresses and makes her look pretty. She even decorated her room. I wanted green, man. Celtics green, because that's my team. I was even going to settle for green and white instead of green and black. But nope. Her room is pink and gray. I do admit, It was a better option. But Celtic Screen was a good idea, too. I feel out of my element here. And it's only going to get worse, right? Baby Bronte will grow up to be preteen Bronte. She'll fall in love with some jerk in a boy band and plaster that dumbass's face all over her wall. Ivy will take her to stupid boy band concerts and shit. Then she'll fall in love with a real guy, and I'll be the asshole dad meeting her date at the door with a shotgun. And Ivy is already talking about baby dance classes when she's three. I think she'd dig T-ball way more than stupid ballet, but what do I know? I just don't see how I can win at this daughter stuff. And I know Ivy's not ready for another one yet, but I'm totally into trying for number two, like, right the fuck now. We get settled into the copter, and Bronte is fascinated by everything. Wrong again, Nolan. She loves it. Ivy chats with the pilot for the whole 20-minute ride. I think about the wedding. Then I remember Pastor Rockwell, Ivy's father, who kinda hates my guts and is gonna be here tomorrow night when all the parents and family show up. I get it. I took his daughter away. I eloped with her, robbed him and Mrs. Rockwell of a wedding, and then showed up on his doorstep with my newly pregnant wife. He definitely hates me. But it's been over a year, man. Come on. This guy needs to cut me a break. Our resort out in the California desert is going so well, we moved to Colorado so Ellie and Ivy could be BFFs. That's like a whole 3 hours closer to Ivy's parents now, since they're still living at that private school he runs up in Massachusetts. They could at least give me that. Plus, I'm making bank now. I was making bank before, too, but now it's totally legit bank. Club money is kind of dirty, but resort money, now, that's something you can talk to your in-laws about. And I got a huge inheritance when my father passed away last year. Except, Ivy's father isn't into money. He's not impressed by material things. Which makes me roll my eyes. Why are you rolling your eyes? Ivy asks in the headset. Thinking about your dad, I say, and how I can't ever please him. Well, he was certainly excited about coming out here for the wedding. Yeah, but that's because he doesn't know we're all still lying low after we almost got sucked into some bullshit secret society last year. And Five, Jesus Christ. He's going to ask a million questions about Five, and then what do we say? I don't say any of this to Ivy, of course, mostly because I don't know this pilot, even though he's on Five's payroll, and he can hear everything we're saying. But also, because I don't want Ivy thinking about last year. She got shot. Shot. I still can't believe it. The only good thing to come out of that whole nightmare was that her ex, Richard, was proven to be a douchebag, which made me look a whole lot better in the eyes of Pastor Rockwell. Bronte reaches for me, which makes me smile and forget all the crap rolling around in my head as I take her from Ivy's arms. She pats her hands on my cheeks and spits up right on my shirt. I kiss her chubby cheek and say, "You did that on purpose, didn't you?" She laughs out her confirmation. I think she looks adorable in this Top Gun outfit. Ivy drags her eyes off the view of paradise below and gives me an indulgent smile. "She does," she says. "But wait until you see her in the special dress I had made for the wedding." Yeah, that thing. I have no clue where to start with that. I'm really hoping Ivy's gonna dress her for the wedding because it's got, like, layers and shit. Tulle or chiffon. Whatever the hell you call that floofy fabric that fancy dresses are made of. "And her hair will be so cute," Ivy squeals. "I can't wait. I'm gonna burn the entire day into my mind and think about it constantly for the next 100 years. I thought I knew women, you know? Thought I had a pretty good understanding of what they're all about. But it turns out, I only knew a certain type of woman. Baby girls? I just have no clue, man. None. Bronte falls asleep soon after that, which makes me feel all warm and happy inside. So I let all the doubts and weird shit crawling around inside my brain fall away and just enjoy the ride. It is beautiful. The islands down below are nothing but small patches of white sand beaches. The water is so fucking blue. So many unreal colors of blue, there's not even a word to describe it. And then Five's place comes into view. I've never been here before. None of us have. Five is freakishly weird about letting people on his island. But his queen wanted a wedding, and he knew the rest of us were talking about a group one, so he offered. I'm kind of humbled that he's doing this, actually. And not only is he allowing the Rockwells to attend, he even invited Pastor Rockwell to officiate. It means something, especially to a gang of guys like we are, tight-knit and filled with secrets. But Five's secrets are part of it, so it means he's one of us now. I kind of like having a number six on this team. In fact, we're not really six, we're 12. All the girls are part of us now, too. Even his girl, Rory Shrike. Match is going to flip his lid when he gets here, and Cindy, Jesus. I don't know what Mysterious has been telling her all these months, but I'm guessing she kicked his ass when he finally broke it to her that her sister was alive. Cindy and Oliver were kept in the dark on purpose. Five didn't want to risk anyone finding out about Rory. Did I mention he's a little bit paranoid? He is. And that reunion between Oliver, Cindy, and Rory, not to mention Ariel, who didn't know anything either, well, I wouldn't miss that for the world. I'm looking forward to my wedding, too. Just like Ivy said, I'm going to burn that day into my mind and think of it often over the next 100 years, just like my missus. But tonight, when these Shrike siblings all get back together, well, let's just say the shit is going to go down. And that'll be one for the books, too. I smile at my private thoughts as the helicopter circles over an island down below. It's big, as far as islands go. I count 3 houses, a few outbuildings, too many bungalows to count, and something that looks like a barn with paddocks filled with horses, with a whole maze of trails leading into the jungle. Yeah, I say, whispering into my headset so Ivy can hear. We're having a wedding in paradise, babe. There's never been a wedding quite like this before, has there? Ivy leans into me, her head resting on my shoulder. Never before, never again. We've got the market cornered on best wedding for all eternity. And I can't wait to see you all dressed up in your tux, all hot and sexy. She turns a little, and I think she's forgotten that the pilot can hear her, but before I can warn her, she says, I'm going to give you the fantasy night you've always dreamed of, Mr. Romantic. I look up at the cockpit and catch the smirk on the pilot's face as he looks over his shoulder at us. I pull my headset down with the one free hand Bronte isn't monopolizing right now, and then do the same for hers, so I can lean into her neck and whisper, Mrs. Romantic, I don't need the fantasy anymore, because I've got the real fucking deal. Every day of my life. She giggles, hiding her face in that shy way she used to do more often when we first met. And I decide I like that. I miss it. So I'm going to make it my goal for our wedding night. I'm going to take her to our room, do things to her she's never even dreamed of, and make my missus blush. The entire fucking time.
Chapter 4. West. I like the boat. I like Tori and Ethan. And I like the fact that we're getting married in a few days, and Ethan gets to be my best man. But other than that, yeah, I'm not too excited about this reunion. For one, it's on Five's Island. And ever since Match explained all the particulars that surround that guy, I've been a little leery of him. He's got history. Not the good kind. Secondly, is it really a good idea to get the 6 of us, not to mention our girls, all together on the same island? Nolan's bringing his new baby, and I've got my son with me. I mean, does it take a genius to figure out that answer? So I'm not excited about that. But Tori is. She says it's not any different than us moving to Colorado, and I guess she's got a point there. We all live there now. all except five. Tori and I sold our house 6 months ago and bought a place in Fort Collins. It's not down the street from Ariel's milkshake mansion on Mountain Avenue, but it's still too close if you ask me. They are together all the time. I'm still headhunting, and Tori is my partner now, so she works too. We bought a small jet to fly in and out of Fort Collins Airport with the leftover money from the sale of the house. It was a huge gamble after I lost pretty much everything last year. But we've been steadily making it back. So yeah, that's worked out better than expected. Plus, I kind of like seeing everyone. It's funny, I see Nolan more than I do Pax or Oliver, even though they both live in the same town. Nolan lives down near Denver by Mac's house. But I see a lot of clients down in the tech center, so I stop by their house all the time. If you'd have asked me last year if Nolan would be my best friend, I'd have laughed.
What are you laughing about?
Tori asks. Nothing, I say, stifling my smile.
Are we almost there?
About 10 minutes, maybe. I think that's it. I point off in the distance to a barely perceptible island on the horizon. See it? Tori squints, then nods.
I'm gonna go wake Ethan up and get him ready.
She stands up from her chair, leans in to kiss me on the back of the neck, which drives me crazy, then disappears down to the cabins. I'm ready for this wedding. There was no talking the girls out of a group wedding after things settled down last winter. We'd been waiting on Nolan and Ivy to set the date because she refused to walk down the aisle pregnant. She is, after all, a pastor's daughter. And they did, after all, elope and not tell anyone. So we've been shacking up this past year. But Ethan deserves a set of married parents. He's had enough instability in his life, and I like the idea of marriage. A lot. It means Mrs. Corporate can't get away from me again. Well, not easily. I laugh again. Fucking Victoria. I gave up on us a while back, but last year changed everything for me. And if there's one good thing about coming back to the Caribbean, it's that I am reminded of the time we spent out here on Pax's Islands. It was fucked up, but Jesus, it was fun too. And it got things moving, you know. Before that little adventure, we were enemies. And after, we were teammates. Having five strand us on that island was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was the first time I ever thought about telling the truth. To anyone, but most importantly, to Victoria. How did I ever expect her to trust me when my life was nothing but secrets? Of course, what followed. All the revelations and finding out my parents were the ones responsible for just about every bad thing that ever happened to me. That sucked. But you can't move on until you confront all the old demons. I know that better than anyone. The guidance system on the boat begins beeping, letting me know our destination is approaching. I take control and steer the 40-foot Sea Ray Sundancer towards the marina and lose track of the past as I concentrate on the future. Five is there on the dock with Mac and Nolan. They walk up and Five takes over, jumping aboard to get us moored. I step down into the main parlor just as Tori appears from the lower deck with Ethan, his hair all mussed and his eyes still filled with sleep. We've been on the water for the past week, swimming, snorkeling, and diving so I could show him the best place to catch lobsters, so he's understandably tired. But he won't be tired for long. That's not the kind of kid he is. It was Five's idea for us to buy the boat in North Carolina, dock it there for a few months, then schedule a family vacation to Florida this week. So we motored down the coast, and we've been island hopping all week. It's overkill. I think we all agree that it's overkill. But overkill isn't necessarily a bad thing after all we've been through. I step outside into the tropical heat and sun with my family, and Five greets us with a huge smile. Victoria, he says, nodding his head at her.
Aston?
She shoots back. Tori is a champion grudge holder. She still hasn't gotten over the fact that Five was sneaky, but she's amicable. For Tori. Hey, Ethan, Five says to my son. Ethan runs past him and jumps onto the dock, then takes off running like he's been here a million times, the sleepiness forgotten. Kids, they just adapt. I know that better than anyone.
Where's Ivy and Ellie?
Tori asks, as soon as we're on the dock with Mac and Nolan. Over at the main house, Nolan says, pointing.
I can't wait to see that adorable baby.
Tori winks at him. She has fallen in love with Bronte. We've seen her at least once a week since she's been born. Tori is obsessed.
And?
Tori says, looking up at me with a smile. I smile back, because I know what she's gonna say. We've been dying to tell everyone.
We have news to tell.
Tori sings that sentence out like she's a giddy little girl. God, I love her. Wait, Max says, eyeing me. What kind of news?
We're pregnant,
Tori bursts out.
Yep,
she says, holding her hand over her heart.
I've been holding that in for 2 months.
Congrats, Nolan says, clapping me on the back. That's great, Vibe says, shaking my hand. Thanks, I say. But I'm looking at Mac, because he's frowning. What's wrong? I ask him. Ellie doesn't know this, he says. Not like a question, either.
Nope, Tori says. It's news for everyone. I think this is the perfect weekend to celebrate, don't you?
Well, Mac says, rubbing his hand down his face. The thing is...
Shit,
Tori says, changing her tone.
Don't tell me you guys have been trying and haven't...
She doesn't have to finish. Mac nods his confirmation. She's devastated today. And I sort of used you guys as an example of how we didn't need biological children. How great it would be to adopt.
Shit,
Tori says again. This time she looks up at me.
We can't say anything. Not this weekend, West. It will just make her sad.
Hey, I say, I'm cool with that. No one deserves to be sad on their wedding day. It can wait. I'd really like to brag about this baby this weekend, but not because I want to make people feel bad, just to, you know, be a fucking dude proud of his boys getting the job done.
You're the best,
she says, leaning up to kiss me on the cheek.
I'd better go find our wild son before he disappears into the jungle.
She laughs as she says it, but there's truth in that. Ethan is all fucking boy. From top to bottom, that kid does nothing but jump and run and everything you can do with a ball. Throw it, kick it, hit it. He does it all. I watch her walk off, her round hips swaying underneath her lilac wrap, her back tanned golden brown from being in the sun this past week. Shit, man, Nolan says. I didn't know it was, like, a thing. Does Ivy know? No, Max says. Then don't say anything. I don't want Ellie dwelling on it this week. I just want her to have a good time. Is she gonna be sad to see Bronte? Nolan asks. Mac just shrugs. I wish I could say no, but... Dude, I don't know. She's just fucking sad about this kid stuff. But you can adopt, I say. I bet Tori can help you guys find a great kid who would love to grow up with you as his rich bastard father. I grab his shoulder so he knows I'm just fucking with him. Mac will be a great father. Probably the best ever. Thanks, Mac says. We really should look into that. I don't want her to be so preoccupied with this. Besides, we've only been trying for 10 months. How long did you and Tori try? I wince, then shrug. Does it really matter? I'll take that as you weren't even trying, Mac says, sighing. Then he jacks his thumb in the direction of Nolan. Neither was this asshole. Don't worry, Five says. We won't say anything, right, guys? We all nod. We'll make sure Ellie has the best wedding ever, I say. Because we're still the Misters. So if Perfect has a problem, we all have a problem.
Chapter 5 Pax. Miss Cookie, I say, my hand on Cindy's breast.
Yes, Detective Mysterious.
She purrs back, her ass grinding into my dick as I press her against the wall of our little island hut. I want to fuck you.
I know you do.
She coos, turning to place her cool hand on my cheek. She pouts her lips at me, movie star style.
But we're due at the dock in 17 minutes.
17? I growl. My hand paused mid-nipple squeeze as I consider if 17 minutes is enough time to have a proper fuck, or if this will have to be a quickie.
Quickie,
she says, reading my mind.
We can't be late.
All right, I sigh. Fine, I say, pulling her top down and taking both her breasts in my hands. But we won't have time to roleplay.
I think I'll live, Detective.
She giggles back. Except, I say, kissing her neck. She loves this. So she throws her head back, her long golden hair falling with it. She's like a goddamned goddess.
Except what?
She whispers back. Except that report you turned in last week, Miss Cookie.
Yeah?
She says.
The one with my monthly expenses on it?
That's the one, I say, kissing her mouth.
What about it?
She says, her words getting caught up in our kiss. It had a suspicious charge, I say.
Did it?
She breathes. Yeah.
What was suspicious about it?
You spend $1,700 at a place called the Sugar Stop.
And?
She says, holding her giggle as my hand wanders between her legs. I'm thinking. She reaches down to grab my growing cock, and I have to pause for a second so I can enjoy it. I really like how you smell like sugar, Miss Cookie, but $1,700 in sweets might be excessive.
Oh,
she asks in her fake starlit voice.
Well, you're right, it is. But the Sugar Stop doesn't sell sweets, Detective.
No, I ask, dropping to my knees as I lift up her short skirt. She's got a bikini on under her little dress. We almost never wear clothes when we're out here on our island, but Oliver and Katya are here too, so...
No,
she says, her fingertips mussing up my hair as I pull her bikini bottoms aside and lick her. She wiggles, leaning back against the wall, like she might need it to hold her up.
They sell sex toys.
I laugh as I lick her. I can't help it. Cinderella Shrike has the best imagination. Best. Imagination.
Would you like an itemized list, Detective Mysterious?
Why, yes, I say. Tell me exactly what you purchased, Miss Cookie, and explain how it's pertinent to your job as my assistant.
Oh,
she moans as I start strumming her clit.
Well,
she loses her train of thought for a second, but I reach up and pinch her nipple, and she squeaks out,
it's a long list.
God, I love her. I have 15 minutes, Miss Cookie. Begin.
Well,
she says, opening her legs to give me better access. I hold both her thighs as I press my tongue into her sweet spot, and she grips my hair tighter.
The first thing was the I rub my ducky massager.
I stop what I'm doing to look up at her. She's biting her lip, trying not to smile. What does it do?
It's just a fun bath toy. I was gonna surprise you tonight.
Okay, I say, smiling. What else? She pushes my head back between her legs and says,
don't interrupt me, Detective. I hate it when you lose your train of thought. It's been proven that multitasking is inherently bad for working relationships.
There's no way she can't feel my smile against her wet pussy.
I just went in for that, but then I saw the Eiffel Tower dildo, and it reminded me of the trip you took me on for Valentine's Day last year. So I had to have it.
Jesus, I mumble. I back away, grab her hand, and push it between her legs so she can put on a little show for me. What else did you buy? I'm watching her face, not her hand, because I just love the way she chews on her lip when she masturbates.
Cookie dough. Edible. Lubricant.
She says, her words coming out in halting gasps as her fingers get busy.
I can't wait for you to lick it off my ass.
I have my hand inside my pants after that, my fist wrapped around my cock.
Then I saw the Princessa vibrator.
Princessa? I ask, trying to figure out just what the fuck that might look like.
It looks like a crown.
She purrs, reading my mind.
And it spins.
Is this shit all real? I ask, getting a little excited about her imaginary trip to the sugar stop.
Pax!
She laughs.
Don't interrupt me, and don't make me work so hard. This is my quickie, remember?
She pushes my face between her legs again. But fuck this. I grab both her wrists, hike them over her head, press her against the wall, and push my dick hard up against her belly. I think, Miss Cookie, I say, staring down into her blue eyes. Such an excessive sex toy, Bill, means you're planning on trying to seduce me. She says,
fuck me, Pax, right now.
She tears at my jeans, popping the button open and unzipping me. Doesn't it? I ask, ripping open her shirt and tearing it down the middle.
Fuck me,
she repeats, grabbing hold of my cock and squeezing it with her tiny hand. I reach for her little bikini bottoms and drag them down her legs, then grab her, right behind both knees, and hike her legs up so I can slide right up inside her.
Yes,
she says.
It's excessive, detective. Punish me, right now.
I thrust inside her and she squeals again. Her hands are all over my hair, her fingertips grabbing onto it, harder and harder as I slap her ass against the wall each time I enter her.
Fuck me,
she whispers.
Don't stop. Ever. Just...
I kiss her. Hard. Punishing her that way, too. I nip her lip as I fuck her against the wall. I want to see all those toys, Miss Cookie, and I want you to show me how to use them.
Even...
she pants.
Even the Eiffel Tower dildo?
Especially the Eiffel Tower dildo, I say. I'm fucking her so hard now, her ass is making thumping noises each time she hits the wall. Hey! Oliver calls from the hallway. What the fuck? Cindy and I cup a hand over each other's mouths, stifling the laughs. Shh, she says from the other side of my palm. Get the fuck out here, Oliver yells. We're leaving in 5 minutes. I take my hand away and Cindy calls out,
be right there, Ollie. I just gotta grab my curling iron. Go find Pax. I think he's down at the beach already.
Fuck you, you liars. I know he's in there. Oliver pounds on the door again. Get your ass out of here, Mysterious, or I'm gonna... But then we hear Katya.
Oliver, stop it. Leave them alone.
We laugh as Oliver is dragged away, still threatening me.
Hurry,
Cindy whispers.
I'm not letting you go until we come, so hurry.
Oliver is gonna kill me. But hell, Oliver always wants to kill me when we're all together these days, so fuck it. I pick Cindy up, walk her over to the bed, throw her down, and say, turn over, Miss Cookie. I'm gonna punish you now. I spank her ass red and she squeals with delight for every single slap. And then I grab her hips, push my rock-hard dick inside her again, and fuck her hard until we both come and collapse into the bed covers. I love this girl. We're getting married in 2 days, and she's gonna be mine forever. So fuck Oliver. He's just gonna have to get used to it.
Chapter 6. Ollie. Pax's Island was a goddamned mess after all that shit went down with West and Tori last year. The other island, which I can see from this beach, was also blown up. But he took it better than I expected. He hired a demolition crew to come out, take down whatever was left standing, and raise it to the ground. It took out a lot of trees, too, but he filled it back up with sand. Pristine, white sand. I think these two islands are worth more now with nothing but palapas and huts than they were with those two houses. Katya and I just got here this morning, but Pax and Cindy have been here for about a week. Their hut is pretty nice. It's got solar power and running water from a giant cistern. It's even got a ceiling fan. But the only thing I can think about is... he is in that hut fucking my sister. While I'm out here. What he's doing breaks all the rules. I snarl at Katya. She does one of those backward motions with her head, Taken aback, I think that's called. Sorry, I say, trying to pull her close as she